Hey, hi everybody, and this is the third initiation discussion. It's not exactly studio conditions here, but it will have to do. And there's odds and ends here as we are fixing up the Little Bear Meditation Center. You know, Polaris is quite high in the sky up here when you can see it. At 70 degrees or almost 70 degrees north latitude. So we have a lot of external work to do, but we've already had people here meditating, and it's supposed to give us the sense of where we are going. You know, Polaris is a great star of direction. So today is the 4th of September. And this is one of those programs where I'm going to have to come in and out. You know, I take 10 minutes here, 15 minutes here, and then go do some necessary things and then come back when I can. Now, here is an important statement about the third initiation. And I will read it. I would point out that the third initiation is approached from a level tableland of experience and consciousness, and not from the heights of aspiration or fanatical sacrifice, or from a standpoint of a devotion which handicaps the service of the devotee and of the master as he seeks to serve. So, here, DK is talking of the manner of approach of the second initiation and how the manner of approach to the third initiation is different, more mentally balanced, you might say, more Libran. And in the sense of the balance, there's a lot of the Sagittarius involved. The ninth petal of the egoic lotus is in a way ruled by Sagittarius, and once that opens, we enter into the third initiation associated with Capricorn. So let's just say that one stands steadily and takes aim from a firm stance. There's even a star in Sagittarius which has to do with the firm and steady stance of the archer. Rukbat or something like that. I can look it up. So Sagittarius, of course, can be involved in the second initiation and can give fanatical sacrifice and all those things. Okay, as I suspected, my wife needs me to do something here, but I'll at least finish this paragraph. So the heights of aspiration, I think we can look at the first degree in that way, and even the second degree, even though we have the throat center coming into prominence at the second degree with spiritual intelligence and the illumined mind being achieved. And yet, because it is related to the astral plane, and because that initiation is related to the sixth ray, we will get those phenomena associated with the sixth ray, and when we carry them to extremes, we do get the heights of aspiration and fanatical sacrifice. Well, if we read enough Agni Yoga, there's plenty of sixth ray in it, along with the first ray, and Master Maurya is saying, strive fierily. Well, that's good, and it is necessary, and Master DK tells us that aspiration is not just an emotional attitude, but it is a proven scientific method of transformation. So I think it's a good thing when people have fiery aspiration, as long as it does not carry them away and incline them to lose their mental balance. He knows, as a candidate for initiation, that, quote, life. Well, that life is one. and naught can ever take or touch that life. Now that basically, this is a quotation from Rule 6 in the Rays and Initiations. Life is one and naught can ever take or touch that life. Well, this is easy to say, but have we overcome the illusion of fragmentation sufficiently to remind us that life is indeed one, and can we touch that oneness without hampering our ability to handle illusory diversification, which we must forever do? His sense of proportion as to form becomes adjusted, and we can say the presence of Libra is demonstrating, allowing for a balanced mental approach. Libra rules supermind, related to the atmic plane, and hence to the spiritual will, as well as to the mentality of that particular plane. So a balanced mental approach which sees clearly what is at stake. This is the level tableland. You know, the Masons speak of meeting each other, and they say on the level, and that has penetrated the jargon of our colloquial exchange. Are you on the level? You know, are you speaking truthfully? Are you meeting me on the level? Do I have to look up at you? Do I have to look down at you? Are you looking up at me? Are you looking down at me? Or are we meeting on the level? And spirit, of course, is always on the level with all other demonstrations of spirit. So he is forward-looking towards the soul and not backward-looking towards the form nature. The moon, the moon always carries the consciousness backwards. So the moon is being overcome here, and we're thinking of all of the spiritual possibilities which lie ahead with this first solar initiation. Some very sincere devotees and promising applicants are so preoccupied with form and its disciplining that they have no real time to give to soul expression. So we should, you know, I would say, pause and assess. Is that true of us? I mean, the form must be attended to, but there must be a balance in proportion in the time allotted. They are so interested in their reactions to their self-imposed discipline, or to their capacity to conform, or their failure to accept the discipline, that the spiritual truths seeking entrance into their hearts, you know, heart and soul, let's remember that, heart is soul, fail to make an entrance. So let's say this is a preoccupation with lesser but initially necessary things, but at a certain point these things must be de-emphasized. Maybe I can learn how to spell that. De-emphasize, right. So the spiritual truths are what we're after, and of course it is, in a way, a mental initiation. It's the fifth ray is very prominent at the third initiation, and it is the third initiation. So by numerical resonance, the two mental rays are involved. Temperance in all things. Again, think of the tarot and the temperance card at Sagittarius, and there is not a planet that is exalted or falls in Sagittarius. and also Libra. Again, these two planets are very important in the approach. So both Sag and Libra are involved in this approach. Temperance in all things, the wise use of all sustaining forms, that's something that the second ray begins to achieve. The sixth ray is not so wise in the use of form, is not so wise in the use of form, but second ray is more gentle upon the form and understands, broadly, its use. The wise use of sustaining form and self-forgetfulness are the hallmark of the disciple and not the beginner. So let's just think, are we disciples? Disciples are not beginners. Or are we aspirants, probationary disciples who are more at the beginning of the path? Right. So many disciples today who should be functioning in the Hall of Wisdom are still fanatically working in the Hall of Knowledge, which, let's call it the Hall of Learning, and are still so earnest over their physical disciplines that the disciplines, earnest, now this is one of those great six-ray words, you know, another great six-ray word. They're so earnest over the physical disciplines that the disciplines of the soul are ignored. So, you know, where are we pitching our focus, high or low, and are we too excessively physical in our approach to the path? So, are we too excessively physical in our approach to the path? I would ask you to reflect on this. Applicants have to learn the significance of the words of Rule 6 for disciples. The lesser rules are rules in time and space and cannot hold the group. Let's just say the group overcomes the illusions of time and, well, I'll put them this way, time and space. And once time and space are seen as the illusions which they are, then a readjusted sense of values results. A readjusted sense of values results. Okay. Well, you know, as I said, this is going to be a program that is divided into various sections, and I'm just going to take a little break here and see what the dense physical plane demands. Okay, hi friends again. It's been about 5 hours since I was able to continue with this, but now let's go forward. Taking these various selections that mentioned the third initiation. Coming down to the immediate practical issues, the initiate is confronted with the problem of work within the individual framework. For I am not here developing or dealing with the requirements for the initiations above or beyond the third. You know, that's only wise. So many people who imagine that they are passing through the fourth initiation would be lucky to pass through the second. At least that's my, considered opinion after dealing with many disciples. Here, the initiate has reached the point where he grasps the significant fact that the way into the inmost center, let's call this, what is the inmost center? But for practical purposes, Yes, for practical purposes, the inmost center is the center of the ashram, with which he is affiliated, is most securely guarded. This against disruption and the inadvertent foiling of the plan, or the inadvertent interference with the plan. And our outer rituals, such as Masonry and Rosicrucian rituals and others, reflect this guarding of the inner process by the what's called the outer guard, or the tiler. No one can pass onward and take those more advanced steps which admit into the higher worlds of being and of unparalleled potency. Well, compared to the potency that we presently have, yes, indeed, until he has demonstrated within the framework of his own life a definite control of energy. And so we have to prove ourselves in the individual field first, and then we will be allowed into the area where everything we think and do and project can affect many, for better or for worse. So until he has demonstrated a definite control of energy, and in his own life, and this the Black Adept also possesses, control. Okay, so that reflects, this reflects the first initiation. Purity of motive, which the Black Adept can likewise have. If by purity of motive you mean single-hearted and one-pointed intent, and this is a perversion of what must be developed before the second initiation can be taken. And interestingly, the Black Adept can stand before the Bodhisattva, which is, you know, really an amazing idea, and still veer off after that has been accomplished. And then, of course, there has to be deep love of humanity, which the Black Adept never has. So there are some qualifications which the Black Magician or Black Adept possesses, which are also possessed by the White Brother, necessarily, but beyond a certain point, as we begin to travel on the way of the Syrian initiations towards that great representative of the Cosmic Christ, the Logos of Sirius, we encounter qualities that the Black Adept just will not cultivate. Selflessness, willingness to follow the light wherever it may lead, ability to begin work within the larger framework the moment such an attempt becomes possible, clear vision and spiritual insight, a developed intuition, that's, you know, the Buddhic plane, and the Black Adept is not concentrating there, and an undeviating intention and strong faith in the future. All of these qualities are waiting for the one who can prove in his own individual life that he can control energy, that he has purity of motive, and can demonstrate these qualities of love, selflessness, willingness, basically a non-self-centered approach which sacrifices on behalf of the divine plan and does not sacrifice others for the sake of one's own exaltation. When these qualities begin to show themselves, it then becomes possible to admit the initiate to further advancement upon the way. When these qualities begin to show themselves. So it's not going to be easy, and we realize that the way of sacrifice is the way to be trodden. There is no other way to open us or open us to reception of the secrets of the kingdom of heaven and open us to the potencies of those higher realms, which would destroy us if we were not prepared, and worse than that, might lead us off on the path of determined selfishness. Okay, this is from the Rays and Initiations 154 and 155. So, you know, DK is giving us various requirements for the third initiation. Sometimes, of course, he does hint at what is required of the advancing initiate in the higher initiations, but he doesn't treat them as if, you know, they can possibly be of practical use to ourselves. And so we move on here. Let's see. I don't have the page number for this, but I suppose this is 686, and I'm going to try this. Thus he moves, goes, thus he goes. From strength to strength. Okay, so this is somehow page 155 and 156. So I'll put that in. R and I. 155 and 156. Thus, he goes from strength to strength. All the time, the hierarchy is aiding in his development. And at the same time, this is interesting and amusing in a way, protecting the way from him until such a time as glamour cannot reach him. So we seem to be talking about the speaking of the initiations of the threshold. The issue of glamour should be solved by the time the third initiation is reached. Of course, I suppose there are such things as cosmic glamours, you know, if we follow the law of analogy, but with such things we are not at this point concerned. This individual security of his is only reached between the time of taking the second initiation and the third. It's at the same time he achieves a definite mental polarization. That's not just mental focus or mental interest or a good mind or an acute mind, but a true focus, not in the astral body, but in the mental body, which is enlightened. Focus in an increasingly enlightened mental body. Prior to that, and that's where most of us do stand, prior to that, he is still regarded as a potential hazard and unstable. So, from my perspective, you know, this is about passing the temptations in the desert. And they do exist, and a person has to somehow haul himself off into those arid regions of the psyche and there confront the possibility that his newly found powers could be used selfishly if he doesn't address the temptations in the correct manner. And then he would fall victim to his own dweller, or he would become the dweller rather than identifying with the angel, and we would have a very serious situation. I suspect that that's the dividing point. I think the temptations are the dividing point, where those who will follow the left-hand path, there I have to write that down, LHP, and that's the left-hand path. With those who will follow the left-hand path, cannot pass the temptations because they are just, you know, invested in their own individual exaltation. They call it progress, but it may be a strengthening, but it's not real spiritual progress. After that, he may suffer from illusion, but there is no fear of his permanently turning back, and this means that one can turn back for a short time and then correct oneself, and reaching the left-hand path, and so perhaps in rare cases, finding his way into the Black Lodge. We might say those who are treading the left-hand path do not necessarily find their way into the Black Lodge, which is good. They can still be redeemed, you know, and I'm sure in the past we've all had flirtations with or bouts of selfishness, which could have been dangerous if continued. The major liability of the average, I'm remembering this, it's not here somehow, but initiate is sloth. Ponder on that. Somehow that came into my mind and stayed there. And basically he's telling us that even the initiates of the threshold, I suppose, do not work with sufficient vigor and application. Now, I wonder if he's talking about third-degree initiates as well. I hope not. But let's see. Let's see. From illusion, yes. The major liability of the average initiate is sloth or lack of speed. I better put that in. Ponder on that. Or lack of speed. Sloth. Okay. Or lack of speed. Well, we can test ourselves. Sometimes I suspect we think we are moving very rapidly and with great pressure upon ourselves, maybe as much as we can possibly stand, maybe running as fast as we can, but more seems to be expected of us. Okay, and now we go on to a paragraph which I've always thought is very important. And I think it contains some important hints for a number of disciples. The greatest problem, my chronometer. All right, there we go. The greatest problem facing aspirants and disciples prior to the third initiation is that of comprehending the nature of identification. And I want to say, not just mentally, but experientially, at least to some degree, because it's easy to express certain concepts without really being able to achieve the state of consciousness to which those concepts refer. This concerns, in the first instance, the relation of the self to the self, capital S, and of all selves to the all-inclusive self. And by that, let us think of the universal logos when we talk about that. Of course, we can go beyond that and think of the only one self as that which transcends any universal demonstration. But the universal logos really is an extension or expression or some finitization of the absolutely infinite self. So, you know, this is the kind of thing that I want to really emphasize as being extremely important and a really new frontier for so many. Of course, it has been repeated endlessly as each one of us is the victor of infinitudinous universes. So it seems to me. So, you know, this is not unfamiliar. It has been mysteriously repeated endlessly. But of course, there is the problem of Lethe, the river of forgetfulness. And in a way, any time a universal logos emerges out of the absolute infinitude, which itself emerges out of the absolute, we're going to have a crossing or a drinking of the water of the river of forgetfulness. So, experiencing identification by whatever means we possibly can, and obviously that's not going to happen within the boundaries of the personality consciousness. So, let us think of the universal logos, yes, but even more of that from which the universal logos emerged. It involves the mystery of duality with which they are occupied, and the very moment the theory as to essential unity becomes definite realization, then the realm of synthesis is entered. Well, I wish that for everyone, for all of us, this is entirely, you know, we treat it as a new frontier beyond illusion, beyond fragmentation, into the world of the pure reason, the intuition, which sees all things in unified relationship and eventually sees all things as one, with no difference. All forms are alike in that they veil and hide the light, and are but externalizations of the one infinite being. So says the Tibetan in that magnificent definition of harmlessness. So we have to somehow understand the relation of our little self to the greater self, which we can consider to be the soul, the triad, and of that self and of all selves to the all-inclusive self of the universal logos, which itself is simply a finitized extension of absolute infinity, which itself is the registration of all possibility by the absolute deity when seeing itself. Well, you know, these are stretching the abstract mind maybe quite far. But each one of us has to come up somehow with a formulation of these more ultimate possibilities. DK has talked about some tests at various initiations where the initiate is required to create a formulation of certain certain proposition concerning the next step and the type of consciousness into which he is entering and the type of realization which is beginning to dawn upon him. Okay, so the very moment the theory as to essential unity becomes definite realization, and remember, realization pertains to the atmic plane. The fifth level, counting from above downwards. We only have up and down, you know, a little bit cumbersome to speak that way, but that's what our language gives us until we evolve something better. Then the realm of synthesis is entered, which does not mean that differentiation is ignored. Okay, let's be clear about that. This does not mean that for practical purposes, differentiation is ignored. Every master is a master of differentiation at a certain level of perception. For that type of realization, language as we now have it has no words. So let's get busy and evolve some new language according to our ever-growing experience. And it is therefore impossible to formulate concepts to interpret the consequent and resultant state of being. And yet we have to remember the Tibetan is an initiate into the mysteries of being. That's not just the mysteries of mind and light or the mysteries of love, although that has to be solar systemically profound, universally profound, but the fundamental mystery of being itself. Well, in this paragraph, there's so much that we could ponder on as indicating for us next steps into the realm of synthesis, where the law of synthesis really is understood and is not just a word. And I really do think, you know, from my own experience anyway, that the heart center is involved here, and the heart and the head, and that higher heart center we call the egoic lotus. And then finally, even the monad itself is a 12-petaled expression. I mean, who knows? Someone knows what it looks like to the higher perception, but the number 12 is there, as in all heart centers, and the zodiac itself is a 12, the heart and the head of the one about whom naught may be said. So somehow in this great synthesis, or the appreciation of what synthesis is, the heart center is involved, various heart centers, and I wouldn't try to go about understanding what it is without some opening of the various hearts with which we are equipped. Okay, moving on here, still in the rays and initiations, it, that is, the consciousness of the third degree, is a blinding conviction of unalterable will. Blinding, what is it blinding to, you know, blinding to obstructive differentiation, and blinding to obstruction in general. A blinding conviction of an unalterable will carrying all before it, no possibility of resisting it. If only, you know, the Black Brothers knew that this was the case. So, carrying all before it, oblivious of time and space, which have been experientially proven to be illusions. You know, once there is no division, how can there be time and space? Aware only of intensity of direction, and carrying with it two major qualifications or basic recognitions to the initiate. So this is, you know, at the third degree, this kind of realization begins. But that degree does not mark the apex of realization. A sense of essential being, which obliterates all the actions and reactions of time and space. Oh, this is so good, isn't it? And, you know, if we've even had a flash of what this can mean, we know how important it is. So, you know, these words can stay written in this book, or we can do something with them and try to create in our consciousness and realization what the words speak of. So it's the first aspect of divinity, and maybe even beyond the first aspect from a certain point of view, a sense of essential being which obliterates all actions and reactions, kind of a Libra thing there, actions and reactions of time and space, even though they do exist in the necessary illusion to which we are subjected or self-subjected, and a focused will to good which is so dynamic in its effect that evil disappears, or we might say the illusion of evil as essential disappears. It really is a phantom produced by ignorance. That's why in Buddhism, if I'm correct here, the great sin is ignorance. Evil is, after all, only an impelling sense of difference, leading inevitably to separative action. And, you know, with the kind of realizations we are talking about here, all difference is seen as illusory. So there can be no evil where there is no difference. An impelling sense of difference, you know, which feeds pride and distinction and the idea that some are elevated over others. In terms of essential being, that cannot be true. No one can be essentially elevated over others. There is one being in all cosmos, and it is indivisible, though illusorily apparently divisible. That seems to be the game that is played by the periodically self-blinding one. That's us. That's it. And why do we do that? Well, in my how can that be answered? But in my infinitization book, I took a few stabs at thinking about why this all occurs. A sort of infinitely ongoing self-objectification within finite perception, as if the great being, in order to be itself, must contradict itself, if it is indeed the fount of all possibility. Well, you know, there are mysteries. Sometimes I think that a universal logos is infinitely separated in realization from what the absolute deity sees when it beholds itself. At the dawn of every universal Mahamadvantara, that even such a great being as the universal logos is an infinitesimal, an ever-lessening, converging upon nothingness, but still illusorily present in the consciousness of that which has been extruded from absolute infinitude. There's a solution to our difficulties, and it somehow lies in the realization of the one and only life which is existent, infinitely transcending all possible universes. But then again, I digress. It's okay, so let's go on a few more things here. Master DK is so deep in what he's presenting to us that it really gives one pause, and how do we dare talk about these things? But we have to make an attempt, we have to make sure we understand to the best of our ability, and we can only do that by really examining what you've said and comparing it with our own thoughts and using our own thoughts to redefine and elaborate what he said, so we make sure there's a link between what he said and what we understand. When the third initiation is taken, the initiate becomes aware not only of the significance of the command to know, know, express, reveal, destroy, resurrect. Those are the five words in Rule 14. Whether they begin at the first initiation or whether they begin at the third initiation, perhaps. Good justification for thinking of them as beginning at the third initiation. To know is of the third initiation, to express of the fourth. To know, express, reveal of the fifth, and it is called, after all, the initiation of revelation. No express reveal destroys of the sixth, destroy the temple of Ezekiel, and resurrect the seventh initiation, and that is, after all, the name of the seventh initiation. So, when the third initiation is taken, the initiate becomes aware not only of the significance of the command to know, and of his innate ability to express the will nature of the monad in carrying out the purpose of Shambhala, but that through his fused personality soul, he is now in a position to make revelation to the hierarchy that he is en rapport with the monadic source from which he originally came. I can only say, wow, this is a very high expectation. So, from this perspective, I think I should have that from this perspective. From this perspective, the third degree initiate. Third degree initiate has to do all three. Know, reveal, know, express, and reveal, and all in relation to the monad, which means that an impressive sense of unity is descending into his consciousness. He can now obey the command to reveal, because the transfiguration is consummated. What is he revealing? He's revealing the monad. He is not now revealing the soul only, and that would be difficult enough to do for any of us, let us say, but all the three aspects now meet in him, and he can reveal the life aspect as will, and not only the soul aspect as love, or the matter aspect as intelligence. And, I ask myself, How can being be revealed? Because this is more than will. And maybe we have to achieve a still higher initiation, one of isolated unity, maybe the fifth degree, before we can really begin to facilitate the realization of being in others. I mean, can we reveal being? We can be being, but and we can't help but be being. But can the way in which we are being reveal to others the nature of being, and not simply the nature of will, though that would be a high enough realization. Consummated. Well, most of us, as I say, would be doing well to reveal the love of the soul, the love and the light of the soul. But can we somehow penetrate to such a point where, in our contacts with others, their awareness of the divine will increases, and even beyond that, their awareness of essential being begins to dawn in a true realization. So this is, as you know, the first major initiation from the angle of the Greater Lodge on Sirius, even though discipleship on Sirius begins at this degree, and not even the first initiation in relation to Sirius, which is fifth degree. Because it is the first initiation which all the three aspects meet in the initiate. And so many of us will, you know, talk of the monad, but it is talk until the presence of isness, the presence of being, the presence of the presence begins to be factual to us. And what DK seems to be saying is that somehow between the second and the third initiation, this kind of presence has to be increasingly realized, not realized as it will be later, as the intensity of our point of attention increases and the presence becomes ever more intense in realization and consciousness, but at least a beginning, at least a beginning. Okay, there are some other thoughts here as we move forward in the book Initiation Human and Solar. You know, as I say, long ago, I guess, I gathered these out as being rather significant in the discussion of the third initiation. That was 2001, I now discover. But there are many other things to be said, too, in the longer compilation. And the more we ponder together, focusing on a particular theme, the more the revelation will come. You know, the idea is, do we want to dig many shallow wells, or do we want to dig one deep, deep, deep well, which will really reach the water we need? Okay, so moving on a bit here, the electrical energy of the mind now creates the door for the third initiation. Well, you know, these are obstructive electrical phenomena. Okay, PHEN phenomena. And the obstruction which confronts the initiate is that of the electrical figments of his own thinking. I think we're going to learn how it is that electricity is involved in thought form building. We must learn how electricity is involved in thought form building. So these electrical figments, you know, a mental body filled with thoughts, maybe many of them very good, but still fragmentary and obstructive. They shine with their own light. They shine with a light which is all their own, for they are of the highest order and type, because the would-be initiate is almost an initiate and has gone through two initiations of the threshold, but veiling the pure light, which shines behind them, which is the beginning, beginning of the light supernal, met through Venus' sun on the mountaintop. They constitute the sum total of illusion. So the many thought forms we have created, the many interpretations which we have rendered into thought over many, many lifetimes rise up and prevent our appreciation of the pure light which actually shines behind them. The door is formed by the coming together of the three types of energy, fire by friction, solar fire, playing in full force at this third initiation, and electrical fire from the spiritual triad. Note that although the spiritual triad is the true ego or soul, it is related to electric fire and not so much to solar fire, even though the ray which it expresses, one of the rays anyway, is the same as the ray of the soul. So anyway, we have the door of initiation here, and we have to pass through it, and there's a triple fire at play, because after all, the lower mental plane is still actuated by fire by friction. Solar fire has been coming in increasingly with soul infusion, and now there is, because the Antikorana is being built, it is the bridge to increasing electric fire. So let's just say the Antikorana is the bridge to electric fire of the spiritual triad. So we have the electric fire of the spiritual triad making its first impact on the other two fires, for all three are in full activity at this initiatory crisis. So the Antikorana must be significantly built. All are localized and concentrated in that symbol of progress, the door of initiation. So, you know, we can say, is it obstruction, or is it progress, or one leading to the other? All right, learning to spell. Right. So, you know, DK said, well, not all the mysteries are contained in the normal esoteric schools or in the church or in masonry. There are other ways to turn the key to the mysteries, and the we might call it the electrical key, or the key which arises through the understanding of electricity, is one of the very important ones, especially for that electrical sign Aquarius. It is a very electrical sign. You find that Uranus, sort of a planet of electricity, major ruler of Aquarius. And what ray comes through Aquarius is primarily, at this point, the fifth ray. It's on its way transiting from the major distributor Leo into Aquarius as the major distributor, DK tells us. And so the fifth ray gives a particular understanding when associated with Aquarius of electricity. So, you know, and you see it even now. I mean, the fossil fuel cars are on the wane. The electrical cars are coming in. We're looking for ways of cleaning up our environment, and we no longer want to rely upon those sources of fuel, which have a lot more to do with the water sign Pisces than with the brilliant electrical air sign Aquarius. So we're on our way into an electrical civilization, understanding electricity in ways which are far beyond our present understanding. I mean, in a way, the whole of cosmos, the whole of creation, its formulation is electrical in nature. And I suppose any occultist who is also a chemist, or any chemist who's also an occultist, will realize this to be the case. These very subtle electrical forces are what is creating the great illusion, or we can call it creation, you know. But behind creation is something infinitely greater than creation itself. And this gradually we become come to know as we realize the finite nature of any creation or of anything that is not the absolute itself. Of course, nothing can help but be the absolute. There really is nothing else, but the illusion of non-absoluteness settles down upon us and we are blinded to the nature of the ultimate reality. And who's to say that we can ever appreciate it even within a universe? Maybe we can only appreciate it once the universal egg is destroyed, just the way the causal body egg is destroyed, and we are lifted into the absolute infinitude, which is the true being, the true noumenon, you know, super noumenon of any universe. Worlds higher than the 18 subplanes are often called noumenal, but if we want to get to the true noumenon, I call it the super noumenon, we have to destroy the universe, which has occurred, that destruction, countless, literally countless times. Let's see if we have time for maybe one more paragraph. In the gospel stories, our two major episodes in the life of the Master Jesus. Well, he's now the Master. He was not then. Was not then Master. Which throws some light upon this fourth entrance through the door of initiation. See, here he's telling us a little bit about requirements for the fourth degree, but he's certainly not really in the process of training the majority of his students, or maybe, I don't know, maybe any of them, for the fourth degree. And so upon the fourth entrance through the door of initiation, the transfiguration and the crucifixion. Well, transfiguration is the third entrance, and crucifixion is the fourth. In both of them, the three aspects of the personality are symbolized. Interesting. In the first case, they're symbolized by the three apostles who, in bewilderment and profound humility, took part in the third initiation, the transfiguration, and it was Christ who was demonstrating this through his glorification before the apostles. In the second case, the three were depicted by the three crosses. The two thieves, you know, a thief cannot generate from within himself what he needs. He has to appropriate that which others have generated. The two thieves and the central master, but always the three are there. The difference in the fourth initiation is definite. It lies in the fact that the four aspects of the personality, counting the dense physical body as one aspect and the etheric vehicle as the second aspect of the physical body, are involved. For this fourth emanation, C4 has a lot to do with the dense physicality. And even the number M, you know, the M of matter, sums up as 13 to a 4, are involved. And this fourth emanation of fire by friction has a potent and destructive effect upon the dense physical body. What is it? In the law of healing, you know, there's a law in which the lower form turns very destructive and helps with the destruction of the causal body. The great renunciation involves the rejection of the physical life at any cost. There's the rejection of the four, counting from the mental plane on downward, and that cost frequently involves its physical death. And I might say maybe less so as the fourth initiation is taken in the East. But in the West, we certainly do have the tradition of the destruction of the dense physical body. So let's just say, whereas transfiguration is extremely important as regards the etheric body, the dense physical vehicle, which has been holding us to Earth as long as individualization has affected the fourth kingdom of nature. Without individualization, there would be none. That fourth vehicle is challenged, and a great detachment or renunciation occurs. Let's say the renunciation of the personality, which is a four, and of the dense physical vehicle, which is also a four. Renunciation. Okay. Well, okay, you know, we're making a little bit of a jigsaw puzzle here, trying to put all these things together, and of course, they are not sequentially together. They come from different parts of the books, but we are making a mosaic here, and perhaps light will be shed from one paragraph to another. So much lies ahead of us in the Aquarian Age, the opportunity for many to take that third initiation, and maybe even the fourth, as Aquarius is involved in both initiations, and in the fifth as well, though Pisces, in a way, is the most potent of the signs connected with the fifth initiation, giving then entree into Shambhala, which is not the case for all masters. So we have to learn what we are rejecting here, and it is attachment to the matter of the previous solar system, which is in process of redemption. Of course, in a way, because of the high attainment of the becoming fourth degree initiate, this dense physical matter, at least that dense physical matter associated with that type of initiate, has been significantly redeemed. And the relationship that has been gathered around the physical permanent atom, the relationship of various atoms, have been subjected to an excellent type of redemptive process, and are no longer in the same condition they were when they were atoms unregenerate and from the previous solar system and not attuned to this second solar system of love. Okay, friends, onward we go, and this is the let's just call it the end of third initiation discussion, number six. And our day here today is the 4th of August, no, 4th of September 17. And we will begin with the third initiation discussion, number seven, at some time when it becomes possible for me to do that. Okay, so thank you very much for your studies. And as I've told some people, use this in your study groups. If you wish, use the video, stop where you want, discuss a point, let the speaker, who is myself at this point, suggest some thoughts, debate them if you will, or skip over them, whatever you want to do, but it can be useful, I think, for you. So all the best to you, and lots of love and blessings, and we'll move forward together into number seven. Take care. Bye-bye.